Now, back to Lansing's only live afternoon talk show, Ebling and You, on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. They say no one is irreplaceable, and it's very hard to find someone who is truly unique personality, but City of Detroit and the state of Michigan had one as a manager for many, many years. So we're talking about 1979 to 1995, and George Lee Anderson. I want to bring in someone who knew him very well, and that is Lynn Henning, covered baseball for the Detroit News and author of a great book, Bottom of the Ninth, with Kirk Gibson. Hello, Lynn. How are you?
Hi, Jack. Yes, that was sudden news that really caught everybody, I think, flat-footed, not only yesterday, but then today, to know that quickly it had been hospice and then that he passed on. It was just not exactly anything people were prepared to absorb so quickly.
Fred Heumann, our friend, was with Dan Ewald yesterday when he got the word, and as you say, it didn't take long, but Sparky Anderson got a lot into a long life and touched an awful lot of people along the way. I've said that he was an odd mix of malaprops and hyperbole, but when you think about the wisdom there, and I don't think there was a more shrewd psychologist in sports than Sparky Anderson.
He really knew how to run a baseball team. He knew how to create a proper relationship with a baseball team that had about it his own unique mark, and I think that came, Jackson, from him understanding how close you could get and yet the distance it had to be observed. You could see that play out on a daily basis. He was very good at kidding a player like Chet Lemon, and at the same time, he knew Chet Lemon's limitations. He knew what was going on with Chet in the latter stages of the season when Chet would have his annual salary drive. He was somehow able to coordinate those aspects of people and make sure that they were really going to become primetime contributors, which Chet Lemon was and everyone else during that great heyday of Tigers baseball there in the 80s. Sparky Anderson was really the right guy to run that outfit because it could have gotten away from a lot of other managers.
You spent an awful lot of time with Kirk Gibson and, of course, did the book with him. How would Kirk Gibson's career have been different if he didn't have Sparky Anderson there to push those buttons?
That is a fabulous question because I think that answer probably contributed to an awful lot of history. As you know, Jack, and you were certainly close to that situation, he and Anderson had their tensions there in the early 80s, to say the least, but that was because they were both frustrated.
Yeah.
Kirk was frustrated because so much had been expected from him in
the
this
next
game.
Mickey Mantle, right?
Yeah, so that was the thing that everybody really threw at him, including Sparky. And Gibson was very frustrated because the game of baseball is such a difficult game to play, even for a superstar athlete of Gibson's particular status. And then Anderson was frustrated because Gibson was complex and intellectual, actually, psychologically. He was a different breed of cat.
Right.
And yet he was this amazing physical specimen. That all had to be coordinated. Somehow that had to be harnessed. And Sparky, after that 83 season, I think everybody was ready at that point to explode. Kirk fundamentally did it, but I think Sparky Anderson really helped him make the transition in his own way. He didn't give in, but he didn't break his spirit either. And that's really, Jack, where I think your question is very appropriate, because many managers might not have been able to pull that off so delicately. And because he did, baseball history in Detroit and for Kirk Gibson certainly changed.
Lynn, I knew Sparky fairly well, not nearly as well as you did, but I called him in 2006 when I was working on this book, Tales from the Tiger's Dugout, and he was a little surprised I got his phone number. At first, he bristled at that, and he said, "Talk to the players. What are you talking to me for?" And he went back into that whole business about a manager only influences five games a year. And I said, yeah, but a manager influences people. And those people influence more than five games a year. That's why I'm calling you. And I finally got a hold of Johnny Bench, and he gave me the best quote on Sparky Anderson I've ever read. He said, a good manager will tell you there's more than one way to skin a cat. A great manager will convince the cat that it's necessary, and Sparky had the cats carrying knives to him. And he did.
That is a very, very, very terrific quote. And yet it says everything eloquently, because Anderson had really the same challenge with that bunch from Cincinnati. I mean, he had some interesting people on that team, some right. very disparate personalities. And I don't care if you want to talk about Clay Carroll or not needless to say any of the real dynamos there. George Foster and Doggy and Bench and all those guys were, let's face it, they were different people, along with Pete Rose, et cetera.
Yeah.
And Anderson seemed to be able to take people like that in their skills and get them to meld. And maybe you can say that's what any manager would have done with talent that deep. I don't quarrel with that in a general way. But specifically, he had to make sure that those teams achieved, and they did achieve. And I don't know that every manager has been able to say that about a lot of gifted rosters. Anderson could do it and say it not only about two teams, but in two different leagues.
We're talking with Lynn Henning, a baseball writer and historian for the Detroit News. Lynn, a lot of people who did not have a chance to get to know Sparky Anderson, I feel bad for them, because you could talk with him about a lot of different topics, and he could sit there and talk to you for an hour about his roses. And he would tell you, he'd give you these little lessons along the way. I remember one time he told me, I asked him why he did something. He said, it don't hurt no one to be nice to people.
Yeah. That was one of his pet phrases, too. He got that from his father. His dad had told him once, it doesn't cost you a dime to be nice to people, and he never forgot that. And that really was probably as close to a creed as he practiced each and every day. He was very much aware of his celebrity and of his place in the spotlight, and he didn't want to yield that. But one thing that he was able to do was to make sure to know exactly at the point where the game was played and he had to step away.
Yeah.
He didn't, as many people felt, sometimes overmanage. He really didn't. He was Captain Hook. No question about it, but managers win and lose that one all the time on the second guess. He was a very, very bright baseball man with absolute passion that burned like the sun for the game, and he knew how to oversee men.
Yeah.
And that will take you a long way if you're blessed to have talent playing for you. You not only will go a long way, but so will those players. And really, I think that's pretty much the legacy to Sparky.
I always thought he would have been a great military general, because he would have gotten his guys to walk through fire for him. But in 1994, when they had the player strike, and he refused to manage the replacement players, I thought that was a matter of principle for him, and there were just lines that he would not cross.
That is a very good point. He wouldn't do that, and it got him into trouble with Ilitch. And that last year of his time in Detroit, 1995, was not a pleasant experience. He had really been upset with some of the things that had happened during the ownership change. And it culminated with, as you said, Sparky's decision in 95, very noble, very principled in my view, as well as yours, to not manage those replacement players. He was not going to be part of an affront to real, legitimate big league baseball players and to the principles that they were observing at that point. And that was something about Sparky sometimes that spoke to the greater depth than a lot of people understood he had. I agree with you completely.
Lynn, in the time that we have watched the Detroit Tigers, we've seen a lot of great players, but there are three to me that stand, and I'm not just talking about players, but I'm talking about figures of baseball in the state of Michigan. One is Al Kaline. One is Ernie Harwell, and the other is Sparky Anderson. And he said, he might have won a game or two a year if he was doing his job, but he did a job that a lot of people will always remember. They'll see that white hair walking toward the pitcher's mound, hopping over that line, and pulling the right strings and pushing the right buttons more often than not.
I agree, Jack. You must have a manager who is going to maintain the respect of his players, and that begins with authority. And he really did that. He was able to achieve that on a daily basis. His players never caught him off guard. That is a tremendous managerial trait, and he observed it for all those years.
Lynn Henning, our guest from the Detroit News. Lynn, I imagine you have a piece tomorrow, or you have one coming up online very soon, if it's not there already.
Yeah, just got that wrapped up a couple hours ago, and really I've been talking with players for the last 2 hours, I would say, probably. Even people like Johnny Grubb, I gave him a call, and good old Johnny Grubb. Roseman just got off the line with him. Petrie will be talking here in a few minutes, and on the list goes. And all these guys can't wait to discuss a manager that was really so important to their lives.
Lynn Henning of the Detroit News. Lynn, thanks for taking a few minutes to join us.
No problem, Jack. We'll talk with you later.